And we are back and live. And we are talking with Ronnie Headley tonight. How you doing, Ronnie?
Doing good. How are you guys?
Doing pretty good. Okay, I hope this thing does not goof up. It just jumped on me again. That was really weird.
I brought them with me tonight.
Yeah, brought him with us. And you are the owner at Tennessee Paranormal Ghost Tours.
Yes, I'm founder of Tennessee Paranormal, and then we branched out and did Tennessee Paranormal Ghost Tours.
All right, cool. So, just so the people that do watch us here and they haven't probably checked your stuff out yet and everything. I'm going to ask you a question that gets everything started, and it helps people get to know you a little bit. So,
Right.
what got you interested and started in the paranormal?
When I was young, I had an experience around 12 years old. I saw an apparition and just kind of kept it at the back of my mind. And then later in life, in the 80s, I was working as a paramedic and in a funeral home and had another apparition and everything. And it brought back what had happened when I was younger and everything. And just started trying to go from there, trying to figure out what's behind that veil. We're all going to be there one day. And if you can just peek behind it and kind of get an idea, you know? So that's when I started.
All right. So, what kind of places have you been to with your investigations?
I've been all kinds of places. We've done battlefields. I've been to the Dead Children's Playground. I used to work with a team at Ripavilla Plantation, which was the Battle of Spring Hill. I've been to Thomas House at Red Bone Springs. We were are the only team that is a contracted vendor for the state of Tennessee as a paranormal investigation team. One of the park rangers here at a local park, Henry Horton State Park. Henry Horton was the 37th governor, I think, of the state of Tennessee, and they had some activity, and we went in and started investigating there, and just branched out to different locations. I've been to Rose Hall in Jamaica. I've been to Key West and visit Robert the Doll. And just different places, man. But we looked up and found the location that we're primarily based at tonight, now is in Lynchburg. And we've got 16 businesses there that we've investigated about 12 or 14 of them. And they're very active
Okay.
over there.
Yeah, I've heard that Lynchburg has a lot of activity in it, a lot of history, a lot of rich history.
Oh,
And
yes, sir.
if I remember right, it had a lot of history for the Civil War, didn't it?
There was no Civil War activity there other than a training camp. And then General Forrest had a 100-man escort. They called him an escort. It was like his bodyguard and strike force. Most of the people that was on that team came from that area of the county.
Okay. So, how many people you got on your team?
There's five of us right now. We have a couple of new members, guys that have been in this type business and everything, team members come and go. So we were working with just three of us for a while, and a gentleman just moved here that's on the team, Chad Smith. He moved in from Georgia, had a team down there, and we added him. And then we got a new one. Her name is Katie Armstrong. She's just graduated high school, been totally amazed with it all of her life, little experiences on her own and everything. And we put her in as our investigator in training right now.
That's cool. So, when you guys go out, what kind of equipment do you like to use?
Jeez, if I tell you one thing, I've got so much equipment. My wife's like, if you don't stop buying it, you're going to have to buy another house. My bedroom, if you could see it, I've got two big, huge metal shelves and it's just slap full. So I've got everything from SLS cameras, K2s, I've got a Geoport that was built in England and shipped in. I've got Afterlife that was built in England and shipped in. You name it. God of Fire.
So out of all of your equipment, what's your favorite one to use?
Oh, the Geoport, by all means. I mean, if I had to take one thing, it would be my Geoport.
Okay. So now I'm not familiar with the Geoport. Can you explain that one?
Geoport is like a, looks like an antique radio box and everything.
Okay.
It is a hacked radio. It's hacked on the FM. It has a echo pedal, a gate pedal, and a reverb pedal in it. So with a reverb, it plays everything backwards. It has an adjustable sweep on it, so you can make it fast as slow as you want. It goes through the channels. We have it set where it goes through the channels just rapid. So the reverb pedal, anything that you understand has been reversed and turned back around so you can understand it. Mm-hmm. The echo pedal is so I can set it where it'll say it 2, 3, 4 times. That way, if you missed it the first time, you've got a chance of catching it the second, third time.
That sounds like a very fun piece of equipment.
It is. It's very good. If you've ever watched Nick Groff and everything years ago, he used it on several of the shows and stuff. And I had a chance to investigate with Nick one time and just got sold on it.
That's cool. Yeah, the only guys I really watched were the Ghost Hunters with Grant and Jason.
Okay. Well, go back and watch my 5 minutes of fame. I was on Kindred Spirits, Blood in the Water on the Travel Channel. So that was at Hell's Bar and Dam. So that was a very interesting place too. It's here in Tennessee.
So what's the most intriguing place that you've went to?
Most intriguing? I'd have to say Lynchburg. Like I said, it's like some sort of portal there. It's famous for the Jack Daniel's whiskey, which the underground limestone caverns and water. Mm-hmm. So I think there's some sort of portal that's there because of that.
Yeah, it could be.
It's just insane. It's got so much history. One of the locations is now a vet's office. It used to be originally the town doctor's house, a hospital, mm-hmm. then a boarding house, a funeral home, and now the vet's office. And so we got tons of activity going on there. The jail was built in 1893 and used till 1990. And the thing that's amazing about it is one side of the jail is the jail, women's downstairs, men upstairs, the sheriff's office. The other side of the jail was where the sheriff and his family lived. And it's a very interesting little community.
A waste of space there.
No, sir.
So what kind of activities have you captured that you might want to talk about?
The jail. The first time that we did the jail, I had a lady that was on my team. It was her first big night. She'd been doing some private investigations with us all over and everything. And it was her first investigation going into a location other than just a private residence. And I had the Geoport sitting upstairs, and we'd been told that there was an entity in the men's section up there that did not like women. Didn't do anything harmful, just tried to scare them and everything. So with the Geo sitting on top of the steps, and as soon as we walked up, it says, lady, I'm going to rape you, across the Geoport. And she's like, I don't think so. And I said, don't talk to the lady like that. It proceeded to tell me, F you, and started cussing and ranting at me. And I'm like, holy crap, So we went back downstairs and sitting downstairs, and she said, all right, I want to go back upstairs. We went back upstairs. It says the slut's back. And we're like, holy crap. And I went outside to take a break, and there was a police officer come by, and he had forgotten that we were going to be in there, and he lit me up. So I'm sitting there talking to him, and he tells me my granddaddy used to be a jailer there. And I used to go in and play with the kids when I was little, and I hadn't been in since. I said, well, come on in, because we're going to be setting up strobes after a while, and it's going to look like 1,000 snipers up here with laser dots, and I don't want SWAT coming in on me. So he comes in looking. Soon as he walked in the door, the Geoport said, you snitch. So that's kind of some of the activity we get out of the jail there. We've got shadows and all on camera there with him. and that sort of thing.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. So is there any locations that you're looking to go to?
We're looking at going to several locations as the team this year. Since we've got the new investigator and everything, I'm wanting to take her to some locations like, Bobby Mackey's, places in Alabama. There's one place I like down there. It's called the Dead Children's Playground. Love that place. And several other places. I'm just wanting to go out and give her a little experience at other locations. But we do have three locations, Lynchburg. We have here in Chapel Hill, we have two locations, the Henry Horton State Park. And we have the Nathan Bedford Forest Boyhood Home, which was a part of a Revolutionary War grant. It's 58 acres with the original log cabin, a cave, and some other areas there.
Pretty cool. So you got any like intriguing EVPs other than your GeoVox?
Oh yeah, we capture EVPs all the time. I've got tons and tons and tons of EVPs. I've got one when was working in Spring Hill at the Spring Hill Battlefield and everything, the house there. Mm-hmm. I'd always go in and tell everybody, always be respectful. It's somebody's mother, father, brother, sister. The only place that you're not respectful is if you're in a jail, because if you go in there, they're going to eat your lunch if you're meek and mild. Because they're the low life of low life, so they prey on each other, right? So,
right. Pretty much.
So I tell them, be very respectful. So I'm going in and I say, good evening, Mr. and Mrs. Chairs, Miss Ruby, it's Ronnie. Come in with some friends tonight. Hope you talk to us. If you talk to us, speak into the little box I've got up there with a red light on it. I can't hear you from the realm you're at, but when I come home and listen, I'll come back and give you an answer if you've asked me a question. And so right after that, I'm standing on the landing where lights out, taking people upstairs with a flashlight. And it's like, go up to the next landing, go up to the next landing. And this lady stops and asks me a question. And when she does, we go back and I play the recorder back. I hear a whisper. It says, hi, Ronnie. After I told them hi, it tells me hi. Cool. So it actually called my name. And the next investigation, I couldn't be there. And another team member captured same voice, same location. It said, where's Ronnie? So, we've got some pretty cool EVPs. Moon Pie Store in Lynchburg is haunted. We were in there investigating, setting up some equipment. I asked my partner, and I always put a recorder out when we start. And I asked my partner, I said, do you want to tape the camera or zip tie it? Or how do you want to put it on the wall up there? And he said, I think I'll zip tie it. And when I played the EVPs back, the recorder back, we captured EVP that said, just tape it, mm-hmm. whispering. So they're helpful too.
Yeah. That sounds like it. Sorry, I'm kind of off a little bit because I'm afraid this thing's going to do this again to me.
No problem. No problem.
that was like scary because I just barely got this computer. So.
I know the feeling. I'm test driving this one too.
Oh yeah, but this one's new to me. It's an older machine. But anyway, Joe, you got something do you want to ask or anything?
I was just that jail, that's not that Moore County Jail that's on your website, is it?
Yes, sir. Moore County Jail Museum. Yes, sir.
Oh, so now it's a museum today.
Yes. Yeah, it was court ordered closed because of the conditions in 1990. And they have another jail. That was actually the third jail that county had in its entire history. So it was used until 1990. And conditions are so bad that they court ordered it closed. And they built another one a few blocks down the road and using it today.
Cool. I'm sorry. I am not with it tonight, and it's because of this damn computer.
No problem.
It's got me worried.
So your tours, are those just in Lynchburg, or do you do them other places?
We have other places. We do the Henry Horton State Park, and we do Nathan Bedford Forest Boy at Home. We try to think outside the box. You know, you ever go to a walking tour, it's usually somebody dressed up in costume, and they're telling you stories as you walk around. I don't like to play dress up, so what you see is what you get. Ugly is ugly, and here I am, right? But anyway, I went around and I recorded the history as we walked through. So, like if you ever go into museums and stuff, you've got the lanyard around your neck that you can have the earbuds in. So we give them that, and then I walk around with an MP3 player attached to the transmitter, and they listen as we go through. When we get in front of the building that actually has the activity, I have recorded the owner or an employee telling in their own words what's happening inside. So it's not just you listening to a tour guide and the tour guide telling you. So you're getting firsthand information from the business owner. And then we pause it and take questions and answer and tell what our teams found when our team went inside and did the.
Okay. What about cemeteries?
Yes.
Cemeteries?
I'll take the fifth on that, but yes. State of Tennessee, if you do anything inside of a cemetery, it is a crime. So they have a thing that's called no gaming or playing in cemeteries. So I have gone to Alabama to some cemeteries.
So in the state of
that would be no fun. I mean, when I grew up, I used to play Ghosts in the Graveyard when I was a kid. You know,
yeah, exactly.
It's a big thing here.
Exactly. You know?
And filming in a cemetery, you know, like doing what we do, investigating and filming and taping audio and so on and so forth, why would that be considered a crime? I mean, we're not disturbing anything.
Exactly.
I mean, you might be disturbing a few spirits, but, you know.
Yeah, I
totally understand. They're walking through.
But here in Tennessee, if you go, the area I live in, you can't drive 3-4 blocks that you don't see a cemetery in somebody's yard, you know. The laws in Tennessee, if you cut out a piece of your property and register it with the health department, you can have a cemetery in your backyard. So they're all over here.
Well, you're not able to go and get any kind of permit or anything so you can do investigations?
I have asked some of the places and gotten permission. Yes. You know, the police department say, if you just tell us you're here, it's okay. At some of the little smaller towns. Somebody just asked a question. Had I heard any audio? Was that at the, are you talking about the jail?
Yeah. I've seen anything there, or is it just audio?
No, we've had shadow figures and everything there. So, they've seen apparitions. They've had people come through and see apparitions. So,
being in that area, somebody wants to know, have you done any type of Civil War investigations?
Like I was saying earlier, the Battle of Spring Hill at Ripperville Plantation, that is on the battlefield. So, yes, we've done things at the battlefield areas. I will say my wife that is, she's on the team, but not on the team. She's the money bags and website, you know. So she does the monetary support and the website support and everything for us. But she was driving down on the anniversary of the Battle of Franklin on 431 going to work one morning. And it was right before daylight. And she thought to herself, she says, why is a child out walking to school this early in the morning? Because she could see it looked like a child up in front of her with a backpack on. And then when she approached up on it, she saw it was a Civil War soldier and he just disappeared. And that was like the day before the Battle of Franklin that she saw him. So there's a lot of activity here. Stones River Museum and Battlefield, they have a big, huge burial site there. It looks almost like Arlington. But I talked to one of the park rangers there, and he tells me that what they call the slaughter pen over there, that certain times that you can go down into there and you'll hear screaming and hollering, said it's blood curdling coming out of the woods in that area. Also said that the house that is there in the cemetery that he lives in said, you know, certain times of the night, it sounds like a party going on through the house, you know, screaming and hollering, carrying on. So there's a lot of Civil War activity here.
That's
not surprising, though. That's not surprising. I've always thought that because of, you know, one, that being the oldest part of this country that people have actually lived in and caused havoc in.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of this area that these places are all in are actually parts of original Revolutionary War grants. So there's, you know, like hundreds of acres that were given for being part of the Revolutionary War. So you got ties all the way back into that period.
Yeah, and then Native American heritage background, yes, that this, you know, it's all over. I mean, we've got a lot of that here in Wisconsin as well. I mean, there's effigy mounds and burial mounds all over the place.
Same in this area. I mean, we've got mounds and village sites and all that. Henry Horton State Park even has a river, the Duck River, that runs through it. There's actually a fishing ford there. It's a Native American ford, and you can still see how it come down into the V for them to catch the fish and all out of the river there.
Oh, cool. That would be cool.
So have you ever done any investigation there?
Yes. That's where the park ranger actually reached out to us and said, hey, you know, do you guys have, he said, can you come in and do some investigating and tell me if me and my guys are crazy or if we actually have something? I said, what's going on? And he said, well, they have a hotel, motel, restaurant, event centers, cabins, campground, golf course, all that there. He said, well, we hear people talking in areas of the hotel that is not rented. I said, what kind of talking? He said, well, sometimes it's argument and door slamming. And we go check and there's nothing there. He said, then the switchboard started lighting up. And there is nobody in the room when we go in with our guns drawn, clearing the room, nobody in the room. Mm-hmm. Switchboards checked by the local phone company. They said switchboard room's working fine, nothing there, you know. So we went in, found some stuff, investigated it for about 6 weekends, sat down with them and told them what they had. There's several areas there. They've got 3 cabins that's haunted. They have a cemetery, the restaurant, the event center, the hotel was. They have a boat launch, and the boat launch was had several drownings and all on it. So we actually caught some activity there. And then there's a place that they call the Haunted Spring. And the Haunted Spring was a slave lady had her child on her back and bent over to get some water. And when she did, the child fell off her back. Current took it down river, and they never found it. So we actually caught some EVPs there and some meters and stuff lighting up. And there's no electrical lines, nothing. It's in the middle of the woods. You have to hike into it. So lots of activity there.
That sounds like what we experienced over here in Aztlan.
So do you just look for the ghosts and the spirits and the hauntings, or do you look into the rest of the paranormal world like UFOs, cryptids? I mean, I would imagine being in Tennessee and having some of those woods and stuff in that area, you know, you'd get all kinds of cryptid sightings around there.
There's several around that have talked about and talked to us about Bigfoot sightings in the area. I go up into North Carolina. I'm of Native American descent. I go up into the reservation area a lot. There's a lot of people up in that area talk about, you know, the Bigfoot sightings and stuff up through there, and trails and things they've seen, you know, trees and stuff stacked and moved around and you know, like areas that look like they bedded down in, things like that. So there is a lot in this area. I do believe in it, but I have not spent a whole lot of time in either of those fields. I did have a UFO experience when I was about 16 years old out playing, saw something in the sky. Like, what in the world is that? The way it was moving and turning and the shape and size of it. So I actually just went home and called the Weather Bureau and said, hey, can you guys tell me what's up there? And they started laughing at me. And he said, okay. I said, just go outside and look, and told him the direction and everything. And he comes back. He says, I don't know what it is, but we didn't send a weather balloon up today. So that's all I got out of that one. So,
yeah. Yeah, denial without being in denial.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. Even the DNR likes doing that too. You know, yeah, well, double track or, yeah, that it doesn't exist. But yet, there's too many witnesses that says that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you look at the Apollo and everything when they were talking about looking out the window and seeing it, you know, and then that was quieting down in a hurry, you know. Let's cut to commercial, right? and then same thing with being in the military, talking to some of the pilots and stuff around the military, what they had seen and everything. The jail museum, the gentleman just passed away. His name was Dave, and he worked in the museum as a tour guide there, but he was stationed at Area 51. And I sat down and had long, long talks with him. He said, I'm 90 something years old. What are they going to do to me for talking now? So he'd sit down and he would talk, and, you know, he would talk. He's been on Ancient Aliens and everything when we were talking about Bob Lazar and all of them. Mm-hmm. He was friends with Bob Lazar. And he was a test pilot on the Blackbird. And so what they would do is they would go to Vegas and get on planes. And the planes would fly them out and to these hangars. When they got there, they had blacked out windows. And they'd pull them up in these hangars. And they had buses sitting in the hangars. And the scientists went this way. Test pilots went this way. This one, you know, to this bus. He said, but they would talk to them, you know, talk back and forth on the plane going. And they'd say, hey, well, we're studying this aircraft that we, you know, was on a crash site, and talking about, you know, if we could figure out how this generator and everything worked on it, then, you know, we could supply the world with electricity on a different level, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, Dave was a very interesting man.
So you probably heard a few stories from him about some of the other stuff, like the original crash of Area 51 of Roswell.
Mm-hmm. Roswell.
The original Roswell crash. There was three saucers that night, not just the one.
Right.
And the one that actually got the most attention was the one that did crash on the ranch and wound up kind of breaking apart. The other two did come down intact. Right. And that's why we have some of the technology we have today. It's all reverse engineered.
Exactly. And that's what he said. He said that's what those scientists were doing. They were reverse engineering what they had, trying to recreate, you know,
mm-hmm.
recreate everything.
Mm-hmm. Figure out how it works. Yeah.
And that's what he said. Exactly.
I, being involved in the paranormal like this, I do a lot of research and reading and finding out stuff. In fact, one of the things that I remember reading about was the one guy over in England who hacked into NASA's website. And right. He got information from NASA. What he was doing is just basically looking for UFO pictures. He wasn't trying to be malicious about anything.
Right.
But what he wound up coming across was a file in NASA's website buried deep, talking about non-terrestrial military,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, people basically us actually having a fleet of interstellar ships, and they're being manned by military personnel.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look at the spy planes that we have today. Look at the shape of them, the mm-hmm. detail of them. The tile and stuff that's underneath the space shuttle. I mean, everything, you know.
The way that they're able to fly in such a mode that they're not detected by radar.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know.
Before I moved to Tennessee, I lived in Alabama, and I lived in a very rural area that was a river. Mm-hmm. And we used to have a lot of airplanes and stuff, military aircraft that would fly the contour of the earth down that river, down, you know, and through the canyons and walls and all. So one morning I would come through and I'd see this bright flashlight. I mean, it's like, and it was gone, you know, but I could see the silhouette, the way it was flying into the sun and everything. I could see the reflection in the silhouette off of it because it's like bare metal. And I was like trying to figure out what it was. And I was telling my boss about it. And so I come back in, you know, and was telling him and everything. And he says, sitting there one night, and he said, turn on the TV. And it was one of the spy planes. He said, is that it? I said, that's it. Absolutely. But it wasn't black. It was the metal and everything. They were flying it early in the morning with mm-hmm. the sun reflecting off of it, blinding people so that they couldn't tell what it was. I said, but that's it. So, I mean, you know, and that was back during the time they were breaking down all of this with the reverse engineering and stuff mm-hmm. that they came up with a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject. I mean, I love following through with everything I can get my hands on.
That reverse engineering theory that explains so much.
Oh, it does.
I mean, the way computers and technology evolved so fast. I mean, extremely faster than it should have.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you look at an iPhone, for instance. Look how by the time you buy one and get it set up, I mean, there's another one out in a couple of months. I mean, just so much technology that's turning over daily, you know? Well, so now, what you buy today is obsolete tomorrow.
Well, when I was a kid, computers were still, you know, like the office computers. Like, I used to have a relative, and I'd visit quite often at work because I lived in such a small town. So in order to go to the bigger city, I'd have to ride along to work with this person. And their computers at the state office buildings pretty much filled up a room still.
Oh, absolutely. Know?
And I was like maybe 9, 10 years old then. You're talking mid to late 70s, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Now we got computers that fit in the palm of our hands.
Exactly. I mean, there's more technology in the Xbox than what we landed on the moon with, right?
Right.
Actually, the technology in the Xbox could have landed about 20 of the capsules on the moon.
Exactly.
Yeah, that technology in the Xbox is better than most computers, too.
Sure. I mean,
it's just a glorified computer, gaming computer.
My stepdad, him and his partner had American Mobile Phone, which was an answering service and everything. And then they came up with the bag phones, you know, back in the 70s and everything.
Right.
And I can remember going into the office and they had like this big, huge room of nothing but data banks, you know, spinning and all that with a big mm-hmm. floppy disk, you know, the big square floppy disk thing.
Right,
that you throw
right.
in.
Mm-hmm.
Not the little small plastic one, but the big one, you know. And I can remember all that. That was just back in the 70s and everything.
Right, right. And, exactly.
His brother was a genius. My stepdad owns the company. His brother died and left the company to him and his siblings. But he worked for Hobart, you know, where when they drive out and plug into the plane and check out the systems and recharge everything. Mm-hmm. And so his brother was a genius. He sat down and said, you know, with the technology we got today, why do we have to drive out? Why can't we hand carry one? So he made one and patented it and tried to sell it back to Hobart, and they laughed at him and said, it'll never work. He built it in his basement, a prototype. So he put some flyers out and everything. Somehow it got to the rest area there in Georgia where he was from. And this general coming back to the Pentagon from Florida saw it, picked it up, called him and said, do you believe enough that it'll work that you'll bring it up here and test it? He said, absolutely. So he went back and drove up to Andrews Air Force Base and they tested it, and it's like it not only did what he said it would do, they could actually test weapon systems that they'd have to take planes up to a certain altitude while they were still on the ground. So they had them on everything, including two on each space shuttle.
Wow.
And everything. So
cool.
You know, that's the technology just mm-hmm. you know, to go from something that's big and huge to something that small that would do the same type of work. But it was just being able to use what they'd manufactured out of the reverse engineering.
Right. Mm-hmm. So now after talking to this gentleman that you were telling us about, do you believe now?
Oh, absolutely. I never have stopped. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think it's hard not to believe
when you got so many pilots and especially the pilots that served in the you know, armed forces of some sort, and they're saying we saw something, we can't identify it, and it doesn't move like a normal plane.
Exactly.
You know, or we saw a ball of light and, you know, it doesn't belong here, you know. I mean, when you've got those that many credible witnesses, something's got to be out there.
And when you got fighter pilots scrambling to try to find out what it is, and it's doing maneuvers so fast that their plane can't do without coming apart, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, Foo Fighters.
Exactly.
That's what they used to call them in World War One.
Exactly.
Because that's when they really started. It's kind of weird, but in World War One and World War Two, they had a lot of those happening.
Absolutely.
And all they were, what they were describing those as is basically balls of light doing maneuvers around their already flying plane.
Sure. And you look at, okay, let's get back on another subject with it too and everything. You look at the Aztecs, the mm-hmm. Mayans with their temples and their ruins. You look at the pyramids. You look at all of this stuff. All of them have the same symbols, you know, the eye and the palm of the hand, you know, they're all built on planet and star movement. Things mm-hmm. align, things happen there when they align. Right. So how did they all being separated come to that same concept? Where did they get the knowledge? Where did they get the knowledge to cut and move those big stones like they did? You know?
Well, look at Egypt. Okay, the Great Pyramid of Giza and the smaller mm-hmm. pyramids next to it.
Right.
When you line those up, they line up perfectly with Orion's Belt.
Exactly.
And if I remember correctly, Orion's Belt is where the Alpha Centauri system is.
You look at the one where
about the ley lines.
Ley lines, exactly.
Yep, and all these well-known monuments do connect through ley lines.
Exactly. Yeah, they do.
Yep.
And you look at like the one I think it's a Mayan run where certain time of year when they have eclipse, it lights up the whole snake when it comes the serpent. Yeah. Everything, you know. Yep.
It's one of the Mayan runes down there.
Yeah.
And there's also one of the Mayan runes that whenever you look at it from above mm-hmm. and you lay it out, it looks like a computer board.
Yeah. There's an answer for you. There wasn't a TV back then. They were bored and had a lot of time on their hands.
Exactly. Like I said, I'm Native descent and everything, and we always say, like with the mound builders and everything, mm-hmm. how do you keep people peaceful? You give them a job to do. So they build all these mounds, and then the Barra pits where they take the dirt and stuff out of to build the mounds now become fish ponds. Now you got to send them out fish to put the fish in the pond, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, you make a pond and you build a mound.
Exactly. But I mean, it's just amazing how it all ties in.
Oh, it is, yeah. and this can all and all this can tie right back into the energies of the spirits that we are looking into as well, because exactly. they could be drawing on any of that.
Exactly.
You know, I read something the other day. It was kind of interesting. Einstein actually in one of his theories may have proven that ghosts do exist, because according to one of Einstein's theories, energy never goes away. It just changes form.
Exactly. Kinetic energy.
It doesn't get destroyed, and it can't be created. It just changes form.
Exactly. So. And it's like I tell everybody, there's two type of hauntings. There's a residual and an intelligent. Mm-hmm. And residual is like they were doing the same thing day after day. So that energy, kinetic energy, left a timestamp, a footprint, right?
Yeah.
So exactly. I see it come through the wall and it walks right past me. Well, that wall wasn't there during its time period. It could have been a child. That could have been a route that the child got up every morning and walked to the schoolhouse. It could be where the farmer went down to the barn to feed the animals. It could be anything, you know. Or I went to Gettysburg and I saw half a soldier, you know. Well, you know, when he died, he may have been in a trench or behind a tree or a berm or something, you know, and you're seeing half the soldier. But right. I tell everybody, you've seen the movie Groundhog Day. It's like being caught up in Groundhog Day. It's the same thing happening over and over and over
again. And that's the residual. That's your residual. And it's like putting a VCR, a tape in a VCR and hitting, you know, letting it loop.
Exactly. And
so when it gets to the end of its video, then it rewinds and goes again.
Exactly. And like I tell everybody, you know, and then you got the intelligent haunting, and that's where, you mm-hmm. know, turn this, I've got two lights on this object up here. One's green, one's red. Turn green for yes and red for no. And you ask questions, mm-hmm. you know, the answers to are, you know, you ask questions and you go back and play your recorder back and you get the whispers and everything with the answers. So, you know, that's the intelligent haunting side, you know? So.
But I'm wondering, I've actually wondered several times if you can have both on the same situation where you've got a residual haunt, but at some point it becomes an intelligent haunt, because I've heard of reports of apparitions that walk through the walls.
Right.
But then after they walk through that wall, they interact with the people.
Yeah, I mean, you can have both. I mean, you know, you can have apparitions that you see and everything.
It's the same apparition. It's not sure. a different apparition.
Sure, sure. And I think you can. I mean, you know.
And Nelson had a hard time getting blood out of her.
I think you can. I think you can interact with the ones that you see come through, you know, on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's like I tell people too, you know, if you have one that's not interacting and then it starts interacting, it's just like people, you know, when you meet somebody, you don't walk up to them and tell them your life story and everything else, you know, you just kind of sit back, right. watch them and see what they're about before you. So, and it could be the same thing, you know, but what I often wonder is, you know, when we see a apparition a lot of time, it's in period correct clothing, right? So you see a Civil War soldier in Civil War clothing. You see Adam. I wonder what they see us as. If they see us, what they see us as? Do they see us in that same period?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if the residuals would actually be able to see us, because they don't interact with us. But the ones that are intelligent, maybe they are. You know, they're aware. They're self-aware, mm-hmm. and depending on the amount of time that they've been. You know, pass away and self-aware. Maybe they've watched the world just pass by, and they've That's watched true. The differences that's happened.
Sure. You know, and I have a lot of people ask me, well, why are they here? Why are they here? I'm like, what says they have to go anywhere? There's nothing that says they have to leave.
No, there isn't. But if you know, some of the reports that you have people telling you and researchers that have said some things,
mm-hmm.
you know, some of these intelligent haunts that have happened, they had that opportunity, but they missed it. Or, you know, they had that opportunity to cross over.
Sure.
And they didn't take it. They wanted to stay here.
Right.
Some of them, some of them that are out there, they have theories that some of these intelligent haunts could be people that are not finished or feel they're not finished with the world.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I always ask too, is there's something here that I can do to help you? You know, do you need to get a message to someone? Did you have mm-hmm. something undone, you know? And things like that too, to see if there's something that they're lingering for that they didn't have finished.
Right.
And then again, that it happens so fast that they don't even realize.
Yeah. Maybe they aren't sure that when they leave, they're going to a good place. Well, that's a possibility too, Tom. Yeah. And then, Bob says his grandmother died at 66 years old and appeared to his aunt and her daughter as a 30-year-old woman in her prime.
Oh, wow.
Well, there again, it could be that intelligent haunts could be that they have control over how they appear as well.
That's true. You know,
that's a possibility there. But, you know, and then, of course, Bob also said before that that maybe the residual haunts feed an intelligent haunt. You know, maybe some of the intelligent haunts are actually drawing on what a residual would be, because residuals normally just kind of stay focused in doing one thing over and over and over again. And that energy is stuck there.
Correct. And Bob's right. I mean, if it's a residual haunt, it is energy. And an intelligent has to draw extra energy to be able to communicate. So maybe they're pulling off the residual energy to be able to answer in a way that we can hear.
That's a good possibility, yeah. So,
yeah, anyway, it's going to take a lot of energy to appear to somebody, too. So they got to draw that from somewhere, you would think. Exactly. You know, plus, God only knows how long it would take somebody to, you know, I'm sure that's not an easy task if you're a spirit.
Sure.
To make yourself appear to somebody that maybe don't even believe at all.
Absolutely.
You know, for that matter, because some of these people that see things for the very first time, they're like, you know, they didn't believe in it. And it's like, okay, yeah, I saw a ghost and now I believe, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, those are pretty credible people because, you know, you can tell they're shocked and genuinely like scared.
Absolutely.
They don't know. Mm-hmm. They don't know what it was.
And we've done investigations before where we have taken Scotland. we've taken equipment and put it in the jail with our team and everything and gone and turned it on and come back in less than 5 minutes, everything fully charged, new batteries and the whole thing, and it'd be dead, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we've had that happen.
Pulled the energy.
We've had that happen as well.
Batteries die, files, we come back one time and the whole camera and everything on the little SD card was corrupted. It's like, well, what? Brand new camera, and the card's corrupted.
I've got a security cam system like they use in the federal penitentiaries. You know, it's got the infrared night vision, the whole nine yards in it, 8-camera system. Right. We are working. In fact, I've been down this morning doing some work and everything in Alabama. We've been working down in Alabama with a lady and went in and set up the camera and everything, paused it, looked back at some things that we had on the camera and everything, came home, went to load it into my computer, and everything on the hard drive was zilch. It was gone. I mean, you know. So, and we all sat down and looked at it down there, you know.
See, now that's the other thing. Like, now I'm not sure because, you know, technology has moved so fast and I haven't kept up with it in so long. But I do know this. If I wanted to really erase a hard drive for good, all it would take is a magnetic force.
Exactly. And what are we dealing with?
So if you know you're dealing with spirits and stuff, that explains. Now, does that same theory work, you know, the magnetic force, can that actually wipe the SD cards and some of that other stuff?
I believe it can.
I'm not sure because I haven't kept up to date on my I'm a computer well, genius but all right, I'm kind of like lost when it comes to the newer stuff lately.
Let's pull an experiment.
Let's take for example, okay?
Okay.
If you take a credit card, it's got the magnetic strip in it.
Right.
So if you go into Walmart or anywhere else and lay that card down on one of those pads there that they kill the magnetic strip for security with, that card won't work anymore, right? So that magnetic field has wiped that card, correct? So same thing. We're dealing with electromagnetic fields.
Yep, right. Know?
Well, the first
that's
thing
why, I, that's why we some, sometimes use
right. I know, see, I didn't think about the credit card thing because I forgot about that little thing because I'm too careful. I keep it in a nice big leather wallet and I don't set it down nowhere.
Yeah, but you see what I'm saying. But some people have walked up and just tossed it down.
Right, and then you can't use it anywhere. It's like the same thing with the security card for the hotel rooms. You know, you
exactly.
can deprogram them pretty easily. I've done that.
Well, I have.
And just so you know, static. Mm-hmm. If you're holding one of those hotel card keys,
yeah,
and you get zapped with static electricity, it'll wipe it too.
That's probably how it happened too that day. But it was at Nick's wedding reception that I think that happened.
Over here, we got Jackie over here. He asked, have any of you guys have experienced scents from spirits? In other words, a smell. And absolutely. I have to say yes, because absolutely. I actually have smelled a perfume in a place that shouldn't have been a perfume.
I've had perfume. I've had cigar smoke, pipe tobacco, all kinds of things. I've had people that's had problems that had us come out and do investigations, smell sulfur, smell, something that smells like a skunk, burnt wiring, all kinds of things, So, yeah.
That's kind of weird you'd say burnt wiring, because here lately, just a couple days ago and then previously to that. Now, we're in the middle of winter here, so we have our heater on, but I don't have any of the heaters on in the back room back here.
Mm-hmm.
I just used the main heater out of the living room. I got a fan that circulates the heat. I have walked in here with everything off. I'm talking my camera, my computer, my monitor, everything turned off. Mm-hmm. And I've actually smelt what smelt like melting plastic. And that's happened twice to me now, and I can't pinpoint where it's at.
But it does.
It smells like melting plastic.
Wow.
So, and I know there's activity in this building, by the way, because I've heard it, I've seen it.
Well, I think Bernie's haunting me here.
It could be.
I know where we kind of know who we bought the house from, and when he passed away, and there's just been some weird, I don't know if it's the place is just old or if it's the dude just screwing with us sometimes. I've got a new monitor, new cables and stuff like this, and my monitor will flicker. And I keep blaming the dog, because it only happens when the dog walks under the table that the monitor's sitting on. But the cables aren't down there, so there's no reason for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One of those things that happens that's unexplained, like earlier.
Things will come on that's not supposed to come on.
Yeah, absolutely. I just got this computer like 2 weeks ago, and I've got it all set up and ready to rock. And I got my camera hooked up. I got a new microphone about a week ago, and I got this all set up. And then I'm doing stuff, multitasking on the computer just before the show, and all of a sudden everything just freezes. I got a flicker, and then everything froze. And I couldn't control the mouse. I had no control with the keyboard, nothing. I had to actually
reboot. It just doesn't like you.
Well, it's a new computer.
It's a new computer, and it don't like you.
It's a new computer to me. It don't like you. It is a used unit.
It wanted to come home to me. It wanted to come home to me. I should have bought it that night.
Oh, hush. But no, I did. I got it for a song. It's a wonderful machine. It's got everything I need, and
he stole it.
Well, I have luck with computers and companies that upgrade their computers. I actually, the one prior to this was one that was given to me, and I've been running with it for 4 years, never had a single problem, and then this one all of a sudden it does that to me, and it's like freaked me out a little bit.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you for watching.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Thank you.
Yeah, you that he got lucky. He found a good deal.
I have to agree. It is a good deal. I got the computer for a song, and all the stuff that's in the computer. Mm-hmm. It's worth about twice what I paid for it.
Oh wow. So. Well, other than the private investigate, we do private with the houses and things like that. We do public and private investigations at the jail, where we get groups of people that's never investigated before. We do like a paranormal 101, take all of our equipment, set it up, let them go through, then give them all the evidence and teach them how to go through it like we would as professionals, go through and
that and edit really
everything else. So we do a class like that. So like I said, we tried to do things out of the box. And then I came up with the Spirits and Spirits Tour last year, since we're in a distillery town. The American Craft Distillery and the Lynchburg Winery there are local craft wineries and craft distillery. So I teamed up with them, and so we do a Spirits and Spirits Tour. They go over and do tastings, and then
get a little drunk, a little tipsy, start seeing spirits.
You can do that.
Then we do that. You know, the walking tour. So, you know,
I could do that.
Yeah, I bet you could.
So we go in and do that with the Spirits and Spirits Tour. So we have trademark registered Spirits and Spirits Tours and looking to try to expand those out. We also do speaking engagements at the local libraries and different places, teaching Paranormal 101, because I'd like to see more people get involved and out in the field. And
the more people we can get out there, the more information we're going to be able to gather.
That, you know, doing those ghost tours like that you guys do, and I've heard of those before, you know, people doing ghost tours. We've got a few here that are local that do them as well.
Mm-hmm.
But to actually sit there and lay your equipment out, kind of give people a quick lesson on paranormal, how it's done, how you do things. So that is, yeah, really thinking outside the box on that one.
You know,
I don't think I've heard of somebody doing that way.
But that's what we want to do. We want to get more people involved. And we want to teach them the right way, too, you know, of going in, you know, not just walking in, seeing everything you'll see on TV and jumping in, trying to do an investigation. We do it from a scientific approach. We go in and get temperature readings, you know.
Seeing everything you see on TV, you know, TV is TV. TV's like exactly. Not real. TV is
designed
made
for
TV. It's designed for ratings. It's designed for making money. It's designed for keeping you hooked on their shows.
Sure.
You know, when you go out and look at the paranormal every day, like one of our guests says, it's like you could be sitting in a cemetery. Most of the time you're going to be sitting there talking to yourself.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I tell everybody it's not a dog and pony show. They don't act on command, you know. Right. You might see something, you might not. We've been lucky. The jail, every time we have people in the jail, we get stuff, but it's a pretty hot place, you know.
Well, so, there are a few of those very hot places.
So, you know, we get quite a bit of activity there. But I try to tell them, you know, go in, take temperature readings, take EMF readings. You know, if you've got a meter going crazy, look it back and say, okay, well, you know, the electrical panel's behind the wall where I got this setting. Let's move it over here and see what happens, mm-hmm. you know. And things like that. So we try to teach that aspect of it to give them a scientific approach.
Learn where your electrical
common sense helps a little bit too.
Sure. And you know, I have an anemometer. So if you got wind blowing something, you know, mm-hmm. you see something moving, I go see if there's enough wind force and everything, you know, then it could actually do it. Yeah.
We've got one of those.
It's a smart thing to do, you know.
Oh yeah,
and it's basically detectivism 101. You know,
exactly.
What you're doing is you're eliminating possibilities that could be causing what you're experiencing.
It's more like common sense 101.
And I tell people, it's
detectiving 101. You know,
they see all this equipment on TV, and they'll run out, you know, and they'll ask me, what do I need to go buy? So if you're getting started, there's three things you need: a notebook, a recorder, and a K2 meter, or some way to measure that electromagnetic field. Mm-hmm. So that a mel meter or something like that. That way you can go in and start with those basics. And then when you get a feel of it and see if you like it, then you can put more money in it, you know, mm-hmm. as to what you want.
Oh, yeah.
But to me, that's the smartest way to start with those three items. We started with
the basics, well, a little bit more, but.
Well, we started with a camera and a voice recorder, and I think that was
EMF meters.
I'm 62 years old. I've been doing this since the 80s, you know, so I've got a few years behind my belt.
But I'm 52, and I've been into this paranormal stuff since I was about 14.
Don't let him fool you. He's 72.
Well, I told you I had my first experience around, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old. But actively chasing it started in the 80s, early 80s. And so
I was still in high school in the 80s.
So, you know, actively chasing it was that. then and everything.
Still 85. But
being down here in the South, in the middle of the Bible Belt, in Alabama and everything, in the middle of the Bible Belt and everything, it's like you had to do it like behind closed doors because it was kind of taboo, you know?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what you gotta do. You gotta disprove anything else it could be. I mean, we went out to he mentioned Ascalon Park, Ascalon State Park, or Ascalon State Park.
Is Ascalon State Park, yes.
We've been out there a couple of times. First time we went out there, we had some strange experiences, and we could, you know, discount our EMF meter going nuts by there were no power lines anywhere in the vicinity.
There's no power supplies going through that particular part where we were. Exactly. We were on top of a mound, one of the burial
mounds. We were on top of one of the burial mounds. There was no lines anywhere near it. There was no transformers close by. And it was going nuts.
I wasn't close enough with the camera for it to be picking up anything off the
He was, and I set it down on a wooden log type step that you would use to walk up to the top of the mound. And he started recording it and zoomed in, you know, a couple feet away from it.
I was standing above it. So
Not directly above it, but you know, he was a couple of feet away. He wasn't affecting the meter with a camera.
Exactly.
So he zoomed in, and that's when we got home, you know, and he's like recording all of this, and the thing was still going nuts when I set it down, and we got home and all that footage was corrupted.
Yeah. Couldn't pull anything off the card.
So whatever that field was in that area wiped everything, that energy. It wiped it all. And it even started and when we went back there, I've also noticed that the batteries in the camera started dying faster. The battery of my cell phone was dying faster out there.
We've gone back
to this place. Like we've been back there three times now. You don't usually count the first time because we didn't come back with any evidence because we couldn't get it off the camera. And then we went back two times after that. Or maybe we only went back once, but we plan to go back again.
I started buying those 8-hour battery backup little things that you can, you know, they make them now so compact that I started buying them to plug into gear when I start seeing the batteries draining quick, you know.
That's on my list. That's something that's been on my list since we've experienced that kind of stuff.
All right. What? I think we're getting close to the end here, Joe. And then we'll
stick
around.
Well, guys, y'all need to come down or I need to come up. We need to get together with a team and our teams and let's go do one.
Oh, yeah. It'd be fun. I think it'd be awesome.
Absolutely. Yeah. I know my team would love to.
I want to go that way one of these days.
Around here and we can take you.
Yeah. We're still working on a big place. A couple big places.
A couple of big places.
Awesome.
So, other than what we got scrolling on the screen here, is there any other site?
TennesseeParanormal.net.
TennesseeParanormal.net. And then we're on Facebook as Tennessee Paranormal Ghost Tours Group. We have a page, but we don't do anything on the page. We had to have a page to get a group. All of our activities in the group. We've got about 4,000 followers on there, and they're from all over the world. So
awesome! You know. Yeah, and thanks for watching.
YouTube channel.
We are starting one. I'll get that to you later. But we are starting. It's Tennessee Paranormal YouTube channel.
When they start it, I'm sure though you'll be able to find the link on their website as well for that.
Yeah, we're getting ready to start that one up.
Cool.
That's in the works.
And then don't forget to check us out at utterlyinsaneproductions.com. You'll find all our links there. And in March, you'll see us on paraflex.com. Go subscribe now. Get all your paranormal flicks in one place, or paranormal fixes in one place.
Yep.
And let's see, what do we got coming up Friday? And
they're covering the whole spectrum, by the way, on Paraflex. They're going to cover everything.
You're gonna have everything from podcasts to
stories, podcasts,
and it's from all over the world. You've got people coming in from UK,
Yeah, documentaries. They're gonna have all documentaries on there, and everything.
It's gonna be the Netflix of the paranormal world. I can't wait for it to come out, man. It's gonna be cool.
Also, can I throw this in there while we're
sure?
We will be doing a talk workshop at Scream Fest in Athens at the historic Kleige Mansion. It's one of the top 10 most haunted places in Tennessee. That will be March the 27th. And then August the 20th through 22nd, we will be at CreepyCon in Knoxville, Tennessee, doing some programming there too.
Cool. Very
and
cool.
Friday, we will be back with Melissa and Greg from Fox Valley Paranormal. I believe I got that right. So, cool.
Good guys.
Stay safe and remember anything's possible.
Yep.
And thank you, Ronnie,
thank you
for joining us.
Thank you, guys. I've really enjoyed tonight with you guys.
And don't forget to stick around for a few afterwards.
Absolutely.
All right. And we...